Warning: The Kingdom Cast podcast contains spoilers about comic books, movies, and entertainment in general, as well as anything else that crosses their minds. Please do not take any medical advice seriously, nor legal advice that they may or may not give out. For that matter, it's probably for the best that you take nothing that they say seriously. Thank you for being back with us, Kingdom Casts podcast, for the week of September 30th, 2020. Joining us again this week is Sandra Gordon's Fisherman Swindle. I'm Stan Daniels, and with me as always is Albert Marsh. So, Albert.
Yeah.
You know, last week I'd never heard of the game Among Us, right?
Yep.
And you filled me in on what it is. Well, this week I am happy to report that I am the Among Us World Champion Imposter.
I doubt it.
No. Here's how. Take notes, everybody. Get your notepads out. All of those playing Among Us. Here's how you do it. First thing you do is when you're in the waiting room, you try to be blue. Blue, I have found, is the best color you can be. If you can't be blue, fine. But you definitely do not want to be orange or white. Now, if you end up as the imposter, the first time you kill someone and they call their little meeting and start talking, don't hesitate. Immediately claim that Orange did it, and also he only paid $750 in taxes. This works every single time. Everybody will immediately and without question vote Orange out the airlock. So once you do that, the next time you kill another crewmate and they call a meeting, tell them, okay, so you were wrong about Orange. Anybody can make a mistake, but that's only because White enabled Orange to get away with everything. White is definitely the imposter or killer. And even if White isn't, he's just standing around and letting this happen. 8 out of 10 times, they will then shoot White out of the airlock. No lie. Next two times, just make sure you have an okay alibi and say things like, I don't know anymore. I just want all the deaths to stop. And they will more than likely just bypass you for a different color because blue is a good, decent color who just lost track of things. Then, Albert, when it's finally you and two others, it's over. Doesn't matter what color they are. They know they've been played. They just don't know by who. So take your time and enjoy killing off those last two because they have no recourse whatsoever. Yeah, I mean, really, what are they going to do at that point? Vote?
God. I just tell everybody I'm it.
How's that working for you?
Works out pretty good.
You're not the world champion, pal. I'm the world champion.
I find that's highly suspect.
Am I sus? Is that what I am?
Sus, you're sus.
I'm sus. Okay. Well, I saw some good news this week.
You did?
Yeah. Ernie Hudson's excited about the Ghostbusters movie coming up. He actually asked Ivan Reitman, can I see the script before I commit?
That's not good news. That's just...
Well, no, he read the script and he says, this is what I wanted. This is what the fans wanted. I mean, he didn't throw shade at the last attempt. He was just saying straight up that this is a really, really solid addition to the Ghostbusters run. I'm kind of excited about
that. Was that movie finished?
I don't know what stage of development it's in. I think principal photography is done.
Okay.
I'm not 100%, but when I saw that, I thought, well, good. Yeah, I've been looking forward to that. Haven't you?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know.
Sandra?
Maybe.
You're not a Ghostbuster person?
Depends.
I like the first one. I can even convince myself I like the second one.
The biggest problem with the second one is that it's not the first one.
I think you're right there. Mm-hmm. I think you're right on that. Yeah. Viggo was a good villain.
Yeah.
To have standing around and the little guy, he was pretty funny too. Peter, God, I forget his name. It wasn't bad. It just wasn't the first one. There's a couple of cheese moments, and they cut out a couple of key scenes that would have helped later on. But
Bill Murray didn't want to be there.
Bill Murray never wants to be anywhere. I mean, once he commits to something, he fights it tooth and nail all the way through. But he signed up for this one, isn't he?
I think so.
Yeah. So we got that going for us, which is nice. See, that was a Bill Murray joke I worked in there.
You say so.
HBO Max is going to be leaning heavily into the DC properties. Boy, they're going to be shocked as shit when they find out that AT&T is busy destroying the DC properties. Possible.
If you say so.
Well, they keep saying that. They announced all these wonderful things like Green Lantern and what was it? Was Strange Adventures? And didn't they announce something with the JSA?
I don't know where you're getting that from.
They did announce something with Green Lantern and Strange Adventures. I know that.
They canceled all that money they were going to spend on that is going to go to the Snyder Cut now.
Well, that's important. The important thing is, after all, the Snyder Cut, which will have no new shot scenes except for the scenes we're shooting new, but those don't count. So, yeah, I even hear that George Reeves is going to return as the first Superman in the Snyder Cut.
God.
No, that's that Flash movie that everybody's in.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so everybody's in the Flash movie, too.
Even Dean Cain.
These things just write themselves, don't they? Along the lines of that news, you did hear that they did cast Hawkman. Or yes. At least Dwayne Johnson is saying they did. Aldous Hodge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I saw some fan art. I thought it was actual production art. It was so good. I thought, damn.
Yeah, it looks pretty good.
Yeah, but it turned out it was fan art. I hope the production art looks half as good as that. He was in The Invisible Man. We talked about that last
week. Yeah, that's right. He's the cop.
He was pretty good in that. He's also in Clemency and Black Mirror, Turn, Washington Spies. I like that series. That was a pretty good series, too. And he's been in The Walking Dead and countless other roles. So I look forward to him in this. He looked pretty badass in that outfit.
Yep.
Yeah. Dwayne Johnson's jumping up and down. He's excited about it. And
Johnson's always excited about whatever he's doing. That's why he's a lot of fun.
Yeah. You're in for a good time. Even that. God, I hate The Fast and the Furious.
They're all terrible movies.
Well, they really are. But we watched that one, Calvin and Hobbes, Cash and Hobbes, whatever it was.
Hobbes and Shaw.
Hobbes and Shaw.
Calvin and Hobbes.
Tango and Cash.
Tango and Cash. We watched Hobbes and Shaw, and even though I cringed all the way through it, it was still entertaining at the very least. Have y'all seen that one?
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
No? Have y'all seen?
You're talking about Jason Statham and Dwayne Johnson.
Kevin Hart was in it too.
Oh, Lord.
Good for Kevin Hart.
I think somebody passed a law saying that any movie The Rock gets, Kevin Hart gets a walk on now.
Mm-hmm. Seems to be the case.
Dave Bautista is a jerk, Albert. Are you finding that to be true?
What's he a jerk about?
He was in an interview, and he basically said, don't compare me to The Rock. Don't compare me to Dwayne Johnson. Dwayne Johnson is a wrestler who stars in movies. I was a wrestler, and now I'm an actor.
Did he really say that?
I was thinking, that is about the quickest way to an ass-kicking I could possibly.
I'm smelling some trash talk here for a future matchup.
Well, I don't know. That's not it at all.
You don't think so?
At first, when I saw the headline, that's what I thought. I thought, oh, I'll have to ask Albert about this because clearly they're setting something up. No, that's not the case at all. He's dead serious about this. And he says, I'm not bashing him. And he certainly has qualities that are to be admired. And this idiot goes on, I am anxiously waiting for the day when Dave Bautista becomes a distant memory.
I mean, he was in Blade Runner.
So what?
Rock was in Fast and the Furious.
He's going to be in Dune.
Yeah, Bautista's in Dune. None of that matters. He's not. Do you know what his latest movie was? Everybody forgot it, overlooked it.
It was Stuber.
Yeah. With the little girl.
I'm sure it was Stuber, yeah.
And I know The Rock has done a lot of these comedies too, but there's millions of dollars and fans difference between him and The Rock.
Is hugely successful.
Yeah. I'm not saying that The Rock is up for an Academy Award or should be or anything. I'm just saying, know your role. Did I get that right, Albert?
Close enough.
Is that, what is it?
That's it. You're fine. You got it.
That's it? Okay. Just the audacity. Don't compare me to The Rock. The Rock is a wrestler who stars in some movies. I am a thespian.
I don't know. I haven't seen it, but that just doesn't sound to me. It sounds more like some trash talk.
I honestly thought that too. I read the entire article, but he's not trash talking. In fact, he goes out of his way to say, no, this isn't trash talk. I'm not trashing The Rock. I have nothing but respect for the man. This is awfully bold talk from a man who's best known working alongside a CGI raccoon in a tree. Yeah. I was in Blade Runner. Okay, yeah. Big deal. You're not exactly Edward James Olmos.
I read somewhere, did The Rock buy like half a wrestling thing?
I don't know. Did he, Albert? Albert's the wrestler.
I don't know.
When you read the article, you know that you're not being set up for something.
Oh,
but
he
also
bought a football. The football.
Okay.
XFL.
Oh, that's what
He
15 million.
Yeah, because Vince was going to do that this year, and then COVID hit and killed it, and Vince was like, screw it, we'll just sell it.
So Rock bought half of XFL.
Well, yeah. He bought it. I don't know how much it was or what the investors.
I mean, Lord, XFL is worth nothing.
I was always disappointed by the XFL. I mean, I got real psyched up when they first announced it all those years ago and that the WWF or WWE owned it. Vince McMahon was over it. What I really expected was like in the middle of a football game, somebody to sneak like a baseball bat out there, sneak up behind the quarterback and just kneecap him.
Jeez.
We never got any of that. I mean, those idiots just went out there and played football. I can watch that anywhere.
They didn't even play good football.
I was dying to see them get in a tussle and then like the opposing team cheerleaders run out onto the field to distract the others.
If Stan were ruler of the world.
Oh, I'll be ruler of the world. I just want quality entertainment.
There was a video game called Blitz.
No.
Was it called Blitz the League? Yeah, it's called Blitz the League. So it was a football game that didn't have any NFL license to it.
Yeah.
They could do what they want to with it. So things you could do, you could gamble on your games. You could do steroids.
Oh, hey.
Usually like maybe once in a season, you could send prostitutes to other teams' rooms.
Good Lord.
Or strippers or whatever. And when you did that, it made them highly injury prone in the game.
That's brilliant. You see, that's what I want from the XFL. Everybody else has got football. What are you bringing to the table other than just, you know, football?
You can be like Canadian football and add 10 yards to the field.
No. I was just kind of surprised at the level of jackassery Batista has accomplished in such a short, short time.
That didn't surprise me much.
I mean, that shouldn't surprise me. Yeah, none of this should surprise me. And it's not like I'm the world's biggest fan of Dwayne Johnson. I'm really not. I think he's fine. Some of the stuff I like him in, some of the stuff I don't. I'm not out there trying to defend Dwayne. I just think that was a dick move, saying something like that about a colleague. Why? Why would you do that?
I don't know.
And where do I go about this XFL stuff? I mean, when it comes right down to it, I'm disappointed in Vince McMahon. Isn't he in line next for the presidency?
I'm sure we'll get there soon enough.
Marvel Comics. Oh, quick side note here. Some Marvel Comics may not make it to the stand this week due to printing errors that were occurring at Fry Printing or Fry Communications, where the comic books are printed. Marvel released a press statement saying that Avengers 36, Marvel Zombies Resurrection 2, and some of the variants for the Fantastic Four issue coming out have been delayed because of printing errors.
What? Huh.
Yes, problems originating at the printer.
They had problems last week, too.
Which means there's nothing in the world you can do about that. But just be aware that Avengers 36, Marvel Zombies Resurrection, and variants, some of the variants for Fantastic Four number 24, something's going on with the printer, but they'll have them out as soon as they can. Be aware of that going into your local comic book shop. Don't attack the poor people behind the counter because they don't have all four of your Alex Ross Fantastic Four variants.
No!
Yeah, that does. That affects you directly, doesn't it?
That's right. I did request those.
Did you get all four?
Yeah,
with the printing problems.
Yeah, I did get all four of the Alex Ross Timeless variants. So.
You poor woman.
They're going to look fantastic. Fantastic.
What are you going to do? Hang them up?
Yeah. Hang them up. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Excellent.
I appreciate my art. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's what I'd expect you to do with it. Let's just get a nice frame for them and put them up. There you go. Joseph Kolosky gave us a heads up. They've cast Kamala Khan, Miss Marvel, for the Disney Plus series. Iman Vellani.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, she looks like she'll be a perfect Kamala.
She looks fine.
I haven't seen her in anything. Have y'all?
I looked her up on IMDb and there's like nothing. When they say newcomer, they mean newcomer.
Yeah, she hasn't done anything that I'm aware of.
That's good. She can start fresh. She can come out of nowhere. She certainly looks like her.
Yeah.
There are some kids that you see pictures of and they've got that sour, straight, I'm a professional, I'm an actor, and so on and so forth face. She's smiling in all of her pictures. She looks genuinely happy. This should be cool.
Good actors that are like, my parents send me the dance, they send me the singing, they send me the acting lessons. They don't do real anything kid stuff. They just do whatever their parents send them to do.
No, that's it. Same thing with Daniel Radcliffe's. Daniel Radcliffe's dad was professionally pushing him.
Yeah.
Yeah, for Harry Potter. You'd think, oh, they just picked these three kids and, oh, they're perfect. Yeah, Daniel Radcliffe's dad was a production something or other and kept shoving Daniel into every possible tryout. You can kind of tell those things. But this looks like a genuinely sweet, nice, happy girl. So now we've got Miss Marvel cast. We've got She-Hulk cast. As I understand it, Jason Aaron is trying his damnedest to kill the Moon Knight series through Avengers. So we probably won't have to worry about Moon Knight after this current Avengers arc is over with.
To be honest, I am. No, to be honest, I just don't get the Moon Knight thing. I think I said that last time, didn't I?
I got the Moon Knight thing before Jason Aaron wrote him into Avengers. He would be a good character to explore in a Disney Plus series. If I'm Feige, yeah, that's a property that is ripe for Disney Plus. But now that he's basically God Almighty, can control the hammer, can control the Star Brand and the Phoenix Force has, come to make sweet love to. Jason overdid it. And I love Jason Aaron, but this needs to stop.
Someone had to sign off on it.
Well, didn't he get beaten by Black Panther? I was like, seriously? I mean, this guy just beat
almost
all. He beat Thor.
There was extenuating circumstances.
Ghost Rider and everybody else, and then Black Panther takes him out.
No, there was beats everybody.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. Yeah, for a while, you can't not have Black Panther get hurt. That's to the detriment of the character in the comic books at the moment, because he's got to be realistic. He'll end up being like this Moon Knight situation. Honest to God, any care I had for Moon Knight is completely gone thanks to this Avengers run. Well, can you imagine the pitch every time Jason Aaron turns in an Avengers script where he takes it to Cebulski and Cebulski looks at it and says, man, do you think maybe we need to rein it in just a bit? And Jason Aaron points and says, do you see what Snyder's doing at DC? We have to keep up with them, man.
What if Moon Knight took over the planet?
Yeah. Everybody at DC is wearing a Batman symbol and a hood.
I was about to say, I guess why I don't get the Moon Knight thing is because to me, he was a poor man's Batman. Then they started making him crazy. And then they started making him like supernatural. And then they made him crazy again. The original concept had some interest. The talent behind it made it an interesting read, but it wasn't. If I want to read Batman, I'll just go read Batman.
There's limited appeal to him. I like it when they portray Spectre as schizophrenic, insane, voices in his head. That's got a little more edge to it. That's got a little more oomph to it. The only thing missing from this Avengers thing is forcing every Marvel book to tie in with it and acknowledge that it's happening. And then it'd be right up there with death metal. Dark Knight death metal or whatever it is Snyder's doing over there.
Well, I'm all for seeing more of Namor, but this is one thing that I'm like, no, absolutely not. I'm I was hoping something cool was going to happen, but no, no, not the Phoenix again. Please, no.
This is so foreign from the original concept. The Phoenix Force killed itself in the blue area of the moon. And maybe we should have just left it there.
Yeah, I was about to say, you're going way, way back.
That was what made that story special. It was an extraterrestrial energy source with the capacity and the ability to learn, and it learned from Jean, and it did what Jean would have done, killed itself before it wiped out another solar system. There was a poetry to that. There was an epic feel to that, and it also stayed very personal. This is not personal. This is not epic. This is a gimmick of the week situation coming up here, and we pull Nick Fury as the unseen into all this to remind us that we don't have a watcher anymore. Hasn't Yuta come back? Did we not see Yuta show up somewhere?
Uatu?
Yeah, I still don't buy that pronunciation. That's that little guy from Total Recall.
That's Quato.
But well, I'm right. Didn't we see him show up somewhere?
Yeah.
Where did we see that? Was it in the...
Well, let's just remember who made Nick Fury the unseen slash watcher.
I know.
That to me was
Marvel did at the behest of Disney.
They just wanted to trade.
They wanted him out of the way. They wanted him out of the way.
You could have given
them to do it that way was just.
You could have given Nick Fury a truly epic death.
Yeah.
And instead of just, we're going to keep him on the sidelines over here and then walk in the son of Nick Fury, who bears a striking resemblance to Samuel L. Jackson. Instead, we've got what we've got. I just want the Watcher back. I'd like to do away with the Nick Fury in chains and a cloak. And I'd like for them to leave the Phoenix Force alone.
I guess if you're going to use the Phoenix Force, okay, but...
Not okay. Not okay. The Phoenix Force needs to remain dead. It was a novel concept. You see, it was Claremont was the one that was responsible for suggesting it was still out there, thanks to Rachel Summers coming into this
right,
time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But he easily had an out on that. Rachel Summers could have been connecting with the Phoenix Force from her reality, which clearly never killed Jean, which Jean never died in. We had that set up. I guess Marvel as a whole just took it to mean, oh, yeah, you know, no, the Phoenix Force is still out there. Well, isn't the whole purpose of the Phoenix to die and rise again? And if it is, it's an energy thing. Just leave it out there. It was somewhat cool for 15 minutes in A versus X, but it was still kind of goofy. I forgive that because it led to a few really cool moments. Thought and action become one, Scott. When Emma's trying to explain her and Namor.
Oh, yeah.
And then Scott said, really?
What a mess.
That was a really cool moment. One of the few times I was like, get her, Cyclops.
Like he has any room to talk.
Well, he did at that time.
No. He never has any room to talk.
I could easily get mad at Cyclops.
I did listen to a podcast with Jason Aaron. There was a tweet, too, I think, where he said, no, it was in his newsletter, where he said that he's got something coming up with the writer of the Jane Foster Valkyrie book. Apparently, probably going to restart that. They're probably going to restart the Jane Foster.
Enjoying Valkyrie. Yeah.
But, they're going to have to restart a book because they're going to have that movie come out.
Yeah.
What movie?
Thor, Love, and Thunder.
Natalie Portman's picks up the hammer.
The other thing he said is he's working on something else that's very big that he had to turn in a big outline for, and he doesn't like doing outlines. The interviewer was trying to pry it out of him, and I think, I'm not absolutely sure, but I want to say that he asked him, well, is it like Avengers related or something? And I think he said, no, not really, but maybe tangentially or something like that. I don't know. Course, it's hard to do anything at Marvel now that's not Avengers related. So that got me to thinking, well, what is he going to do next? What character could he possibly do next?
Defenders.
Fantastic Four?
I'm kind of wondering if he's not going to do Black Panther after Coates.
Oh, well, he was good on Black Panther.
Nope.
What's your suggestion other than Defenders?
What, you think they're only
Supreme?
Oh,
what?
God. Squadron Supreme.
I don't like them being in the 616. They need to be an alternate reality thing.
I just don't care for the Squadron Supreme. Again, just like Moonlight, why are you reading these knockoffs? Just go read the original.
The whole point, the whole popularity of Squadron Supreme is that their miniseries was written better than the actual Justice League comic. People were turned on to them at that time. What was the name of the creator, the writer?
Oh, Grunewald.
Yeah, Grunewald. Mark Grunewald, God rest his soul. Yeah, Mark Grunewald just wrote this masterpiece of a Justice League story that Marvel published as Squadron Supreme all those years back. I just don't like Squadron. I like them fine when they're in their own reality and they're separate from the 616 universe. Well, because they don't work well in, you know, in the same continuity as the Avengers and Spider-Man.
Yeah.
No, they don't. I don't know why they have to keep doing that either.
Somebody needs to put their foot down and say, okay, look, if you tell a Squadron Supreme story, here's the Squadron Supreme reality. Mark Grunewald's Squadron Supreme story did not involve any of the Avengers or any of 616. It was
it did.
Way back when, that's how it got started off. But the 12-issue maxi-series. Yeah,
there's an issue in that maxi-series where they go to 616, I think. What's the speedster's name? Whizzer or whatever his name is?
Yeah.
I could have sworn there's an issue in that run that they go, or 616 is involved for just an issue.
I don't recall in that maxi-series. I don't recall. But it's been forever since I've read it, man. It's a great series.
Yeah, it's a very good series, but I could have sworn there was...
Either way, it was largely self-contained. They didn't have to call the Avengers, and the Avengers didn't have to call on them. It was in their own little world, and it affected Jack in the Marvel Universe. You can tell stories like that. It's okay to tell stories. Not everything has to take place in the same reality that Spider-Man, the X-Men, and the Fantastic Four are in.
You were right on Squadron Supreme about how there's no 616 in it. The reason I thought there was, the first time I read Squadron Supreme, it was the original trade paperback. In the original trade paperback, it has Squadron Supreme and an issue of Captain America in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Grunewald was writing Cap, and there's one little crossover issue that's in that trade paperback.
Okay. I just couldn't recall it. But damn, Albert, that's not a book that I went back and revisited a lot. I just remember reading it like in 1988 or 89 or whenever, and I enjoyed it. I got all 12 issues and I liked it, but it's not something I go back and reread like Watchmen Dark Knight. Yeah, there could have been, and I just didn't remember it.
Anyway, it just got me curious about what he could possibly be writing that was going to be so big.
I'd like to see him take a crack at Fantastic Four.
Man, he's going to have to
pry. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't think so. And if he's going to have to pry that out of Dan Slott's hands, unfortunately.
I don't think so. I think Slott's tired.
Tired of Fantastic Four?
Yeah, I think Slott's ready to move on. He's not finding that same magic that he had with Spider-Man. He thought he was going to find it with Iron Man, and he's not finding it there. I believe that if Jason Aaron went to Fantastic Four and tossed them into outer space or multiple realities, which is what the Fantastic Four should be dealing with, is cosmic-level situations and problems, and then just went crazy but was not allowed to use any name brand Marvel items like Phoenix Force, Millionaire, Khonshu, or just other things. Make them have to deal with the Shi'ar and the, what are they called? The Guardians? Guardian is
Imperial
the
main, Guard.
Yeah, the Imperial Guard. Yeah, Imperial Guard. Stuff like that. Give them epic stuff to deal with. And I think Jason Aaron would thrive in that. It's just not working for the Avengers. I don't feel it is.
Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's just so scattered. But I mean, the other thing he said was actually the prehistoric Avengers thing.
See, I was psyched about that.
Was actually supposed to be Viking Age Avengers, and it was supposed to be in Thor.
Well, he never really did enough with it, I don't think.
Yeah, Tony just keeps referencing it every other issue.
Maybe that's what he's doing. He's going to go do that now or something.
The next issue is going to be Prehistoric Avengers thing again.
You see, I was all excited about that. I thought that was a great idea. And it is a great idea. But why aren't we getting more of that?
I guess the reason I don't think it's a great idea is because he's limited to a certain number.
A certain number of what?
A certain number of Prehistoric Avengers. I mean, that's...
Well, I'm okay with that. Not everybody in prehistory can be Odin. Odin's there. Odin's the oldest. And that just kind of fits the Marvel Comics Odin. The novelty of Ghost Rider on a woolly mammoth is awesome.
See, to me, that's like, no.
I mean, no.
Well, he did stuff like that in his Ghost Rider run anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's over the top, but it's acceptable. And okay, the Phoenix Force was there. I can buy the Phoenix Force being there in that situation. It even adds a little bit to the Phoenix Force being familiar with humanity at that point. And you've got a Black Panther. Okay, that's not a big ask. But we're not getting any great stories from it. Tony was trapped there. Tony's not trapped there. Tony won't tell Carol what's going on there.
I don't care for it because, like I said, it's just a limited number of pep characters that are supposed to be these giant avatars that are the founding avatars of the Avengers or whatever. And I'm like, seriously? No.
Strange Academy, number 3, writer Scotty Young, artist Umberto Ramos. I think this is still a great youth-themed book, and the best part about it is it's not falling into all of this Civil War Junior crap going on with Miles Morales and the Champions at this point. They're just completely ignoring that, and I think that is a saving grace to this book. I think Scotty Young's doing a wonderful job of developing the new characters that we're introduced to. He's not putting a lot of weight on the established characters like Doctor Strange, Brother Voodoo, and the Ancient One. They're all there, but he's focusing on the kids, and he's doing a good job with focusing on the kids. You can easily look at the school setup and say, oh, Harry Potter, but it doesn't feel like that. And it doesn't feel like the X-Men with their school. It feels like its own thing, and that's really quite good. I'm enjoying it. Now, the art by Umberto Ramos, he took it up another notch this issue. I don't know what he's done differently with the coloring, but it's outstanding. Strange Academy number 3, and I'm sure there's reprints of 1 and 2 floating around out there. You should give the first 3 issues a try. See what you think.
Out of all the Marvel teen-based books, it's probably the better one. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's not tied in with a bunch of other dumb junk. It's just, hey, here's Strange Academy, and here's kids, here's teachers, and whatever.
Miles Morales is an outstanding book. Miles Morales has been untouchable in that category for a while, but they're making the mistake of weighing him down with this outlaw BS, which is just a retread of everything. It doesn't fit, and it's weighing the characters down. They need to get rid of it and move on. Strange Academy is unencumbered by that. Strange Academy can deal with its stories and its characters and not have to worry about a crossover event. I don't know what the end goal of that crossover event is. I gave the writing a 4, the art a 5, and the dynamic a 3. My overall score was 4. How about you, Albert?
Yeah, I give it straight 3s.
Straight 3s?
Yeah.
Okay, so what did you think of the coloration in this?
I like color. That's a good job.
Yeah, he did. I mean, it really, I've seen Humberto Ramos' stuff inked too heavily before, and this is the exact opposite of it. This makes his stuff pop right off the page.
Yeah, they did a good job with it.
Fantastic Four, number 24, writer Dan Slott and art by Paco Medina. It was actually cute, fun, and entertaining.
I thought it was good, too.
All of which I completely forgot Slott was capable of until this issue. I mean, it really was. Sandra?
I don't know. I just still can't get behind Slott on the Fantastic Four run. It was okay.
It was a flashback to something that up to this point had never actually happened.
Right.
But it was a fun flashback. It was just kind of a little heartwarming situation with a story about Iceman in it. I do have one question. Franklin's hanging out on Krakoa, which they all seem fine with. So I'm taking it that Reed is treating what Xavier did by wiping out, putting holes in his memory concerning that anti-mutant construct he had in the X-Men Fantastic Four crossover.
Yeah.
I assume that Reed is treating that like an Illuminati secret. Would you think that's fair? Because he seems awfully okay with Franklin just running between Krakoa and there. Iceman comes in and he's not belligerent toward Iceman in any way.
Yeah.
And that takes a lot when you consider that Iceman is practically, for all matters and purposes, the son of Xavier. Either Dan Slott is simply ignoring what went on in X-Men Fantastic Four, or he intends for Reed to treat that as a private matter between him and another Illuminati member.
Possibly. I don't know.
You see what I'm getting at, though.
Yeah.
Are you going to let your son, after you know you've been mind raped in a fashion, are you going to let your son trot off to their magical island of
love? I thought Reed didn't know that got done to him.
Oh, no. He made sure he knew.
Yeah, Xavier left it in his head.
That maybe did. I don't know. It's a possibility that no one's keeping up with this stuff properly as far as editorial goes.
It could be. I mean, I'd like to think that Dan Slott made a choice in the presentation and also not just ignored it.
Also, I think you're right about Jason Aaron on Fantastic Four.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, the reason I think that, I was thinking about it. Sandra, you said that Jason had to do a big long outline.
Yeah.
He has to do that because what Hickman's doing takes priority over what he's doing.
Oh.
Franklin obviously plays a role in all this. So Jason Aaron can't do too much with those characters if they're going to affect anything that Hickman's going
to
do.
I look forward to that. I would like to see Jason Aaron on Fantastic Four. Jason Aaron was really good. Most of Jason Aaron's Thor run was top-notch, really good stuff. But it also dealt with big, high-end cosmic issues, especially the stuff that he was best at, like the God Bomb.
Yeah.
And the ending, as he ended his Thor run on it as well. And that's what makes me think that he would be great on Fantastic Four. The Avengers do lend themselves to cosmic stuff, but the Avengers are best dealing with internal Earth-bound situations. We've had enough of cosmic Avengers with the talking fruit invading Earth. We don't need this big Phoenix Star Brand thing or anything along those lines. Fantastic Four are suited to weirdness and out there situations above and beyond. So yeah, I'd definitely like to see it. Sandra, have we convinced you yet?
No. God. I'm still thinking Black Panther. Because they haven't announced who is going to be after
Black Panther. That's true. They've got to tread carefully. And it's not Black.
He ain't writing Black Panther.
You don't think so?
Nah.
That was a very nice, in every one of the Marvel comics, that was a very nice, heartfelt eulogy, I suppose it was, for Chadwick Boseman by Mr. Coates. I thought that was very well done. Yeah. Very well and touching.
That piece of art by Brian Stelafreeze was amazing.
Well, yeah, of course. Knocked it out of the park. Basically, this issue of Fantastic Four, they flash back to a time when Iceman filled in for the Human Torch after the Human Torch had a hissy fit and walked off and left the Fantastic Four in the days of yore, in the early days. And it was just cute, fun. It's standalone by itself. I just enjoyed it. Y'all caught the name of the bad guy in it. This is the, hey, vultures, all of you running out there to grab things off the shelf to resell on eBay later. This is the first appearance of Conquesta.
My gosh.
So right now, get in your car, run out to your comic book shop and demand all the copies of Fantastic Four number 24 with the first appearance of Conquesta.
Lord.
I actually thought that was clever. I gave this issue of Fantastic Four a score of 4.
I gave the art a 4. I gave the writing dynamic a 3. I didn't care too much. The writing and stuff was fine, but I really liked the art.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, I'll go with Albert, although I think the writing was more like a 2.5, but I could go with what Albert's score is.
Okay, fair enough. So I give it a 4. Albert and Sandra give it a 3.3. Shang-Chi, number 1, writer Gene Luen Yang, artist Dyke Ruin. Artist Dyke Ruin. There we go. Y'all there?
Yeah, I was waiting for you to go on.
Yeah, anybody want to weigh in on this?
Is it Dyke? I thought it was
D-I-K-E.
Dickie?
It's not. I'd like to point out, we're not laughing at this individual's name. We're laughing at my inability to pronounce last names.
Because isn't he Filipino?
No.
Poor.
And I hate to do this, but now that I've completely butchered this guy's name, this entire issue all seemed very surface level. It's like, close your eyes and imagine a kung fu story. There, that's it. You just imagine the first issue of Shang-Chi. I thought the art was a bit bland, and I didn't think the action translated well.
I kept seeing problems with people's bodies.
Yeah.
Art.
Yeah.
Well, isn't it 5 weapons? There's 5 weapons.
The 5 masters or whatever.
Okay, the 5 masters of the 5 weapons, which No, they're the five weapons, and they serve under the masters of, gosh, I can't even remember what the guy's name is. It used to be Fu Manchu, but now he's called, is it Zhang Yu? No.
Yeah, let's just go with that.
I just call him Fu Manchu.
Let's call him
it's not Fu Manchu anymore.
Let's call him not the ancient one.
Yeah. No, it's not the ancient one. Fu Manchu was like the villain. Good Lord.
I know.
Shang-Chi's dad. Okay. Apparently, the history now is that Shang-Chi's dad was the master of the five weapons, which were people that mastered individual weapons.
Yes.
This is being needlessly complicated. But anyway, one of them is Master of the Hammer. When that person shows up, I thought, okay, why is the Master of the Hammer wearing lipstick? And then I realized, oh my God, it's a woman.
Yes. Yeah.
Because there were no breasts. The first time I saw her, I did not see any breasts whatsoever.
This is a book that requires an artist that understands how to translate movement.
Yeah.
Into the comic book pages. I'm sure that the artist on this, it looks like his art could develop in time, but right now he's just not there. And this book needed more than that. And it needed more of a story, too. I just thought Shang-Chi deserves better. This is just a standard issue of any Kung Fu comic anywhere and does not necessarily stand out.
Okay. Well, I have a question. Does this have two artists? Maybe that's where I'm getting confused.
There's a flashback artist. Philip Tam does the flashbacks.
Okay, yeah. Okay. All right.
But the colorist is the same colorist through the whole thing, I think.
Okay. I will have to say that I was a little disappointed in this book. I'm not sure what I expected. I don't know. I guess if you're a Shang-Chi fan, maybe it hit all the right notes, because there is a couple characters from the old book that show up.
For me, coming into this, I like Shang-Chi. I liked him when they used him in the X-Men a few years back. I thought that was fairly solid. I liked the interpretation there. I liked some of his stories in the past, but Shang-Chi always worked best to me as a sometimes character. In other words, a character that if somebody had a good pitch for, do a miniseries of. This is not a good pitch for Shang-Chi. Me coming into this, they were going to have to go up and beyond to really grab my interest and pull it into it. And instead, this was just a boring comic featuring a character that kind of looks like Shang-Chi that has the name Shang-Chi. It doesn't really fit to me. They needed something more on this, especially given that he's got a movie coming up. They really need to work this character. They need top-level names on this. What I should say is they need top-level talent on this book, on Shang-Chi, to fully explore what can be done with him, because I know there's an audience out there for him. Got to find an artist that can translate movement into comics. Yeah.
Philip Tan, I mean, he can, but he only does the first few pages.
Yeah, he didn't do the entire
thing. After it jumps forward in present time, it's no longer him.
Well, for Shang-Chi, my score was a 2 across the board.
I gave the writing and art a 2. I gave the dynamic a 3 because I thought the coloring was real good in the comic.
The coloring was enough that at first I didn't realize the artist's styles meshed more because of the coloring.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just disappointed all around with this. I really had more expectations. I would go with 2 all around. That would be fine.
X-Factor number 4, 10 of Swords crossover. Writer Leah Williams, artist Carlos Gomez. I'm back and forth when I start reading anything having to do with Otherworld. I kind of want to tune out, but they keep finding ways to draw me into the overall story. I enjoyed the resurrection protocol problems that they were having in this. I enjoyed the approach that they had, that the mutants' newfound immortality does not work like that across the board under certain circumstances. And I love that they're learning it as we're learning it.
It makes it feel like the tournament, there's stakes involved.
Yeah, it does.
By simply saying, you know, they spend like almost a whole issue doing it. This issue is mostly there to say, if a mutant dies in Otherworld, then we can't do anything really about it. We can't do a proper Cerebro backup with them when they're in Otherworld. It's pretty much what they're saying.
They can come back, but they're not coming back the same.
Yeah.
That was really good twist too. That makes sense. It makes sense that wouldn't work. And I like that the feedback completely rewrote all of the Cerebro backups for Rockslide. We managed to resurrect him, but it's not the guy we know. In fact, we're not sure what version this is. We're just treating him as one of us until he gives us reason not to. This sets up some stakes for this situation. It's just really surprisingly drawing me into it with each issue of the Ten of Swords, Ex of Swords situation. There is something to be lost here, and they found a way to make comic book deaths actually matter.
Yeah.
And that's difficult to do. Rather than like previous writers have tried to do by shutting the revolving door of death, Starlin's tried to do that. Others have tried to do that for Marvel Comics, and it just doesn't work.
Well, but that's instead, what Immortal Hulk is, literally. He's shutting, well, you know,
both Ewing is
messing with the door.
Yeah, both Ewing and Hickman are just steering the ship right into the storm instead, not away from it. They're not trying to avoid it. Instead, they're finding other ways to come up with raising the stakes for these characters. Mm-hmm. I'm still disinterested in Otherworld and, again, Saturnine, but I do enjoy where the story is going. I did thoroughly enjoy it. The art was nice in this. It was different. It's a different artist than has been on the first three issues of X-Factor. And I'll tell you this, Saturnine's first appearances spiked a bit. It was in a comic book published only in England and Great Britain. One of our contributors actually picked up a copy for about $350, but it's starting to spike even more than that. Oh. So there's interest in this. I gave the writing a 4, the art a 4. I gave it 4s across the board.
I gave the writing a dynamic a 4 and the art a 3.
You're at 3.7. Yeah, the art was, I just like the art. I toyed with giving it a 3, but then I just went ahead and gave it a 4. It was solid and everybody's body parts were in the right place. Yeah.
Also, we have a rare McTaggart appearance in this book.
That's right. And McTaggart, out of time and out of place.
Yeah, she's hid away and safe.
She is in stasis, but she's not in stasis. She's able to move freely from what little we saw of her, but she's displaced in time and space. So nobody's forgotten about her. I didn't think they had, but it's nice to see. Savage Avengers. Writer Jerry Dugan and art by Adam Gorham. As ridiculous as I thought it was for Conan to be in modern Marvel continuity, I absolutely love this book. There's no getting around it.
They play it for laughs.
They do, and also you've got a reason. Colin Gath is trying to take over everything, and so naturally Conan's going to have to show up wherever Gath is. I dare say it's probably the best Avengers book in the past 10 years. Dugan.
Yeah, I'd go with that. Not counting Hickman stuff.
Yeah, not counting Hickman stuff. Well, we're almost at the 10-year mark away from that. Yeah. I mean, Secret Wars seems like it occurred yesterday, but it occurred somewhere in the area of about almost 7 years ago now. It didn't it?
I thought it came out in 2015. So, like, his run would have begun in 2014, I believe.
Yeah, 2015. So, okay, yeah, five or six years ago. It was started in 2014, yeah. So, yeah, with the exception of Hickman's stuff, this is the Avengers book. I think Dugan needs to stay put, and if anything deserved to be a full-scale event, it's Cullen Gath.
Yeah.
I could really see that working. I mean, we've got enough on the horizon, so don't necessarily go out of your way to do it. But this is something that you could actually turn into a pivotal event, an interesting event. The art was not up to its usual standards. It was okay, but just not as good as it has been in the past. What did you think about the Doctor Strange Electra hookup?
I mean, I'm fine with it. I mean, it's sort of pointless.
It kind of increases the stakes. He's got an emotional connection to Elektra. Nobody was necessarily thinking it. It's a good match because he's handling the mental work and the mystical work end of it, and she's the assassin. She's there to kill people that get in the way. It's caught a few people off guard, but it didn't me. I mean, when you get into it, they've all slept with each other. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. Inside 616 continuity, there are very few matchups that have not already occurred sex-wise in Marvel Comics. This is one of the few that they could have got away with, Elektra and Doctor Strange. So they went ahead and did it. Jerry Dugan knows these characters. He knows their histories, and he handles them real well. I gave the writing a 5, the art a 3. There's a couple of problems with it, and the dynamic a 5. My score was 4.3.
And I gave the writing a 4, the art a 3, and dynamic a 4.
Okay, so you're at 3.7. I'm at 4.3.
Yeah.
Immortal Hulk. The Threshing Place by Jeff Lemire, art by Del Mundo.
I thought it was a real good one shot.
Damn, Lemire just knocked it out of the park.
Yep. Well, he's a well, good writer in general, so.
I don't mean to seem, I mean, I've read every issue of Immortal Hulk, but we're okay with Hulk just killing who he sees fit now?
Yeah, there was a lot of killing in this.
Or
is this continuity?
Too.
In the book, they said, look forward to more one-shots featuring top-level talent's take on the Hulk.
Yeah, I don't know. I
haven't seen him outright kill anybody.
Well, he did in this one.
Yeah, I mean,
he
several people left and right. He just made judgment calls right then and there. But I don't recall in Ewing's run seeing him out and out kill somebody. And I thought about this a bit.
Well, I mean, didn't they go through all the rigmarole of, I think it was Greg Pak was trying to espouse that.
There's no way he couldn't have killed somebody.
No. Greg Pak actually was the one who said that, no, all of that stuff, the massive destruction, destroying this, destroying that, that Hulk never killed anybody.
Never, ever.
Never, ever killed anybody. And there was a lot of pushback on that.
He indirectly killed the reporter McGee's father, didn't he? I mean, he didn't do it.
Didn't
in the Ewing stuff. They treat Hulk incursions in the Marvel Universe like tornado warnings. And the sirens go off and all this. This has been established for a while. There's been a Hulk sighting in your area. Please go to your nearest place of safety. Don't look him in the eyes.
Yeah.
Yada, yada, yada. And I'm serious. That's one of the rules. Don't look him in the eyes. Causes damage like a tornado. I think McGee's dad was killed by him indirectly. Debris or something killed him or something fell on him or something along those lines. But I've not seen him just pick up and pop people's heads. And I'm okay with that because I think this is kind of an alternate take on Hulk. I don't think this is in continuity. I think this is just something that Lemire was inspired to write by Ewing's run.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it doesn't have any earmarks of fitting in the current continuity.
I can get with that, I guess.
Yeah, under those circumstances, I gave it 5s across the board. I thought it was a very good book.
I gave it 4s.
I gave the art a 5. I gave, what the hell, I'll give it all 5s.
It's a good one-shot. Special mention for Marvel Comics this week, the Giant Size X-Men tribute issue to Cochrane and Wynn came out. I looked at it. It's great. I've got it.
It's real good.
Oh, yeah. I loved it. Loved it.
Well worth the $6. Beautiful book. Mm-hmm. Each page is done by a different artist. It is what it is. It's the exact same words. You know the story, but just seeing different artists' take on it was great.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind when you're out there. That's something, if you're an X-Men fan, you're going to want to grab. And I think starting next week, we're just going to have 3X books a week through the Ten of Swords crossover event.
Yeah, it looks like it.
All right, let's discuss some DC Comics. You ready?
Sounds good to me.
Legion of Superheroes, number 9. Writer Brian Michael Bendis, and there's a different artist for each page, apparently. Albert, has anything happened in any of these 9 issues of Legion of Superheroes?
No, you got to understand the issue before this was this too.
I looked back at that previous issue and I was like, did I miss something? And it's not that I'm missing something, it's that the whole damn book is missing something. We have not had a beginning, middle, and end to any story.
No real resolution to anything.
It continues to be scattered all over the place and you lose track of who's talking. The multiple artists in this issue, normally that'd be interesting. This just turns out into more of a mishmash for me. This run of Legion of Superheroes, I don't feel is doing anyone any favors.
No, it's not. I don't know why they thought it would.
I gave the writing a 2. I gave the art a 3. Most of the pages were pretty to look at, but it didn't lend to the story. And even the Arthur Adams stuff looked like, okay, I'm being paid. I might as well draw this. And I gave the dynamic a 1. My overall score for Legion of Superheroes number 9 is 2.
I gave the art a 3 and writing dynamic a 1. This book doesn't do anything.
You gave it a 1.7. So yeah, that should tell people. There's no narrative to it. There's just Bendis talking for an endless array of characters.
Yep.
Wonder Woman 84. Now, this book is not an adaptation of the movie, but it's a couple of stories that kind of sort of relate to the movie. The first story definitely does. The others.
Story fit in?
Nothing. It looked just like one of your drawer situations where you keep saying they've got a couple of pages in a drawer somewhere and they slap them out.
Well, it's got Steve in it. And Steve looks like Captain Kirk.
Well, it kind of looks like Captain Kirk in it. The second story, Wonder Woman, does not look like Gal Gadot.
No.
Gal Gadot. Writer Anna Abrapta and Steve Pugh and Louise Simonson. I love Louise Simonson. Artists Brett Blevins and Marguerite Savage. I kept waiting for either the kids or Wonder Woman to whip out a tube of AIM toothpaste and credit it for helping solve the museum mystery. That's kind of what it felt like to me.
This book was supposed to come out with the movie, and eventually they just gave up on the movie coming out.
It felt like hype and product placement for no particular product.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from the movie, which I got to tell you, man, I'm losing interest in the more time that passes. They need to get it out on Buy It Now. I'll pay $30 for it to watch it. That and Black Widow. The more time that passes, we've got Mandalorian coming up. We've got WandaVision coming up. We've got a whole bunch of streaming stuff and entertainment coming up. They just need to go ahead, knock it out there, charge us $30 for us, and let us stream them both. I gave the writing a 3 on Wonder Woman 84, the art a 3, and the dynamic a 2. My score was 2.7. Reason I gave Dynamic a 2, it's there to advertise the movie.
I gave it straight 3s. It's okay.
Yeah, I almost gave it straight 3s.
It's nothing special. It's just sort of there.
I almost gave it straight 3s, but I bailed on it. Dark Knight, Death Metal, Meta Versus End. Writer James Tynion IV and artist Juan Geddon.
This is better than the main book.
I got to tell you, man, this comes closer to a semblance of a story than any other issue that has hit in this line so far. He actually provided a narrative for the entire
thing. Yeah, I wasn't really expecting anything out of this book. This is more of an event comic than the main event.
It really is. He gave you a narrative. He took you from point A to point Z in it. He did this with Tynion. Man, I know they're cutting back on superstar writers and artists, and they're going to cut their pay. They need to write this man a check and say, please hang around here.
Yeah.
They really do. They don't know what they've got in T4. Again, what we're calling James Tynion IV. Having said that, it's a stupid, stupid comic.
I mean, it is, but the character stuff, the stuff with Captain Carrot, the stuff with Owlman was all great.
I'm not arguing. That Owlman narrative, that mm-hmm. was a solid 5 across the board. If it wasn't for the damn bat babies and rainbow bats and all the bullshit bat crap.
Yeah, but that was on purpose just so he could call it stupid.
Yeah, and he did. And he did it through Owlman. He did a wonderful job with Owlman. And especially if you use James Woods' voice for Owlman, yeah. That's awesome. The Owlman thing was outstanding. But again, this makes me question, how can Batman, how can Bruce Wayne, how can Superman Wonder Woman allow Bruce Wayne to go forward with the persona of Batman if it causes this sort of problem around the multiverse after this? How does Bruce Wayne justify that? The overall concept of Dark Knight Death Metal is mind-bogglingly stupid, and Tynion illustrates that in this. Yep. And he illustrates it through great character. His Guy Gardner was awesome. His Jon Stewart was awesome. His Owlman was awesome. Damn, let's kick Snyder out and let Tynion write the rest of this. I gave the writing a 5. I gave the art a 3. Because in some place the art looked kind of wonky to me. And I gave the dynamic a 0 because his top-notch writing really pointed out how ridiculous the overall death metal story is.
I gave straight 4s.
Score 2.7. Look, I'm going to go this far. If you're going to buy anything from death metal, buy this.
Yeah.
I gave it a score of 2.7 because the whole thing is utterly and completely ridiculous. But damn, if for no other reason, just to support James Tynion IV, buy this comic. This man knows what he's doing. Batman, Joker, Warzone by various writers, various artists. If you like the current Batman run by T4, then you'll like this. No bad stories, simply a couple of stories that are weaker than the other stories. But all in all, it's pretty solid and enjoyable. It sets up a bunch of stuff coming after the Batman-Joker war. Like, it looks like we're going to have a different Batman for a while.
Also, they take another shot at Tom King's Batman run.
Yeah, they did, didn't they?
Yeah, that's what all that Bane stuff was about for the most part.
Yeah, and that was really good. That was probably, if not the best, one of the best stories in it.
Yeah, because I looked at it more of like Tom King is Bane.
Yeah.
And they're telling him, they let you kill Alfred, and that's the best you could do.
It just pointedly spelled it out for him there. Was that one written by James Tynion?
Yeah, Tynion wrote it.
He is just slapping the snot out of some people.
He needs to. I mean, he's talented enough on his own to get that right to do it, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. The Bane and the Clown Killer stories by themselves are worth the price. And like I said, the rest of them aren't bad, There's just some stories that are a little weaker than the other stories in it. But overall, if you're following Tinian's Batman, you're going to want to pick this up. I gave the writing a 4, the art a 4, the dynamic 3. My score was 3.7.
I guess the writing a 4. Everything was written fairly well. The art a 3 and dynamic a 3. The weak one in the story to me was that Hitch master thing.
I still
like the art in that one for those characters. It's mostly just it wasn't that much of a story.
You gave it a 3.3. I gave it a 3.7. Yeah, it's worth your money.
Yep.
And last but certainly not least in the DC Pantheon for this week, Batman the Three Jokers, number 2, writer Jeff Johns and art by Fabok. Intense, edge of your seat. It's emotionally provocative. I don't want to say that it's going to be the new definitive Joker story, but it definitely could be. There's only 3 issues to this, isn't there?
Yeah.
We got a little ways to go, and it all depends on the landing in this, but really, really good stuff. It feels like I'm finally getting payoff for reading Batman since 1989.
Well, this is sort of Johns' follow-up to Killing Joke.
And it feels like it, too.
I gave the book straight 5s because it was that great, but I don't know what the end game here is. And that's a good thing.
Well, no. There's a couple of websites that are saying it's in canon, but Johns himself has said it's not up to him whether or not this is in canon.
Yeah, Fabok says, yeah, it's canon as far as he's concerned, but Johns just like, here's my story. If they don't want to use it, they don't have to, but it's done either way.
I gave it 5s across the board. I still think this is solid, and I gave it 5s across the board largely because I have faith in Johns with the last issue. Okay, Sandra? You didn't read any DC books this week?
No, I did not.
You better get on that Three Jokers.
Three Jokers, okay.
Jeff Johns is going to go to Marvel and write the 3 Namors.
If he could revive Aquaman and Black Adam, then I might trust him on Namor.
We're going to have Speedo Namor, Black Costume Namor, and Decapitated Head Namor. No,
not the last one. Thank you very much.
He's the comedic sidekick of the whole thing.
The comedic sidekick. Boom Studios, Alienated, number 6, writer Simon Spurrier and artist Chris Wildgoose.
Maybe I forgot. What happened to one of the kids?
He died in an incursion with the sheriff and at the hospital.
I don't know why I forgot that. It was a great ending.
Well, it wasn't that you forgot it. It was that you and I both kind of suspected that maybe he wasn't dead.
Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, we had it in the back of our heads that maybe he wasn't actually dead, but it turns out it was. You liked the ending? Was this everything you could have hoped for from it?
Nah, it just seems like they didn't do enough with the alien, I don't guess. Almost a little bit too easy of an out.
That's a good point. We've been singing the praises of this book, and rightfully so. It is a good book. It's well worth it. The last issue came out. Last issue is number 6. So when it comes out in trade, please do pick it up. You're doing yourself a favor. This has been a very underrated comic book story. However, I do feel this. It had to have, and I'm not calling it a happy ending, but it had to have happiness to the ending.
Yeah.
I think that was the writer's primary concern, Simon Spurrier's primary concern that overrode everything else, that there had to be an up note to it. Even with all the death and destruction, he did give it that up-tempo beat. And that's not saying that everything, that he wrapped everything up in a nice, neat little package. It is saying that he brought the story to a conclusion and we can end it there, or it can always be revisited. For the immediate future, that's where the story ends. This is prime material to be snatched up by Netflix or Hulu.
Yeah, I mean, this sort of reads like that.
But they better have damn good special effects on that alien, because that alien was unique in design and you were sympathetic with him.
Yeah.
The teenager's dialogue was outstanding. Brian Michael Bendis wishes he could write teenage dialogue as well as Simon Spurrier did in Alienated. So overall, I was satisfied with it, but I think Simon's primary concern on this book was that I have to give it an up-tempo ending. There has to be positivity to the conclusion of this story. And I think that in and of itself was a little bit of a letdown given everything that had come before it, but it wasn't much of a letdown. I give the entire series a solid 4.
I think it works real good as a miniseries. Yeah, I'd say a solid 4.
Dark Horse, X-Ray Robot number 1 and 2 by Mike Allred. Man, I'm going to say this. I'm just going to say this once. Mike Allred is comic books.
He's been doing this stuff for decades at this point. This is a new book, and it's just as creative and as well done as any of his best Madman stuff. Or art-wise, any of his work on things like X-Force or X-Statics. He's been consistently great with his style the whole way through.
The older he gets, the better he gets at this. Art, story, and dialogue. In just a few sentences, you've got a good feel for everybody's personality. That's something that's not easily accomplished in comic books.
No, it's not.
The art is spectacular, and it fits this book perfectly. This is one of these comics that is not scared to embrace meta and go just insane with it. This is the most comic book of all comic books to comic book.
It's a comic book ass comic book.
That's exactly right. I don't know how else to put it, but this is the comic book of comic books. In some ways, I feel that all of comic books have led to these two issues of X-Ray Robot by Mike Allred. He's got every aspect, he's got every identifier of every personality trait that a comic book should have in these two issues. And I don't know how he does it. Just hand the Eisner over to him for this one. It is outstanding. First two issues are out. X-Ray Robot by Mike Allred. I gave it straight fives. It was probably my favorite read of the week.
Yeah, this was a great read. I didn't expect it to be this great of a book.
I didn't either. And I do. I like Mike Allred, but I looked at this and I thought, oh, okay, X-Ray Robot, and it's Mike Allred. We've missed this. Let's swing this, in here
this,
and look.
Yeah, this book was lost in COVID.
Yeah.
At the end of issue one, it says issue two is going to ship in April.
Did he write iZombie? iZombie?
No, I thought, who wrote that? What fraction was it?
It wasn't Fraction. That was long before Fraction. Chris Robertson.
So Chris Robertson wrote, Allred drew it. Okay,
yeah. Because, I mean, I was getting some flashbacks to iZombie. I liked it. I didn't get a chance to read the second one, but the first one was very interesting. And the art's, of course, always fantastic.
And the second one, he goes all out with all the portals and time travel. And
you know what else? There's some visuals in this that were very complicated to pull off that the casual reader may or may not just pick up on how difficult it actually is to get the information across, like with the family. The subtle switch in the family and the way he perceives it right there tells the reader exactly what just happened. In the hands of lesser creators, somebody would have had to make the statement telling you expressly what just happened. And Mike does it in three panels without any wordage whatsoever. Later, it gets confirmed in the issue, but right there and then, you just completely understand what's gone down. Mike Allred is an extraordinary talent in this.
He really is.
Yeah.
I gave it straight fives. Albert, what'd you give it?
I gave it straight fives.
Sandra, what would you give issue number one?
I'm going to go with fours. I liked it, but I wasn't quite as enamored as you guys were.
Read issue number two. It knocks it up there. This is a must-buy. Go into your comic book shop and demand X-Ray Robot by Mike Allred. This is what comic books should be. Image Comics. Sea of Stars, number 7, writer Jason Aaron, Dennis Hopeless Hollum, and artist Stephen Green. This continues to be an epic space fantasy. Jason Aaron and Hollum shine in this book. Green's art is really extraordinary. It fits the mold perfectly. I keep referencing Calvin and Hobbes in space, and it still is coming across in that. I just wish it was a little bit more colorful.
The writing is good. The art, yeah, I wish there was a little bit more pop in the coloring. Yeah, but everything's just colored too dark. I mean, it's outer space, and I get that, but you can make it stand out some.
They need to show off Stephen Green's lines more.
Yeah.
And the color would do that. Yeah, I'm not asking for comic strip coloring. I'm just asking for more color in this. We're relying too heavily on greens and grays and darks. Stephen Green's art, his lines are very nicely done, very well handled, and I think more color would bring attention to that. I really do think that Jason would, because of this book, Sea of Stars, I think Jason would probably thrive on a Fantastic Four book. I'd at least like to see them give him a shot on it. I don't like what he's doing in Avengers. The Sea of Stars kind of tells me that Jason may really need to be on Fantastic Four for a while. I give the writing a 4, the art a 4, the dynamic a 4. I gave it 4s across the board.
Yeah, I'm going to give the art and dynamic 3, but I'll give writing a 4.
You're at a 3.3. I'm at 4. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's still well worth looking into, right?
Yeah. It's a good book.
And now the book that I have waited patiently for 2 weeks, ever since I found out it existed. Thanks to Sandra. I had no idea this book was coming down the press, but ever since I heard of it, I was like, I want that book. Well, today I finally got it. Department of Truth, number one, writer James Tynion IV, T4, artist Martin Simmons. If you buy one comic book this week, this is the comic book you buy. This did not let me down at all. I think it cements T4 as the next big writer, and not a moment too soon. This book kicks all sorts of ass, and the art is not going to be everybody's cup of tea, but it is great. It is really well done art, and it adds to the disorientation of the overall story. It fits it perfectly.
On our social media stuff, I picked Three Jokers as the book of the week. If I would have read this before I did that, I would have picked this book.
It really was extraordinary.
And the art is perfect. You may not realize it till you get further into the book. First few pages, I was just like, it's just crappy art. Then as the issue goes on, his art style is a perfect fit for this comic.
Yeah, the artist, Martin Simmons, knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
He knows how to read the tempo of the story and match his art up to it. I have no doubt that Martin Simmons could swing in here and draw a wonderful, clear-lined superhero comic if he wanted to, because you can tell he's that level of an artist. But instead, what he does is he actually utilizes the art to add to the overall feel and discombobulation of the story. This is 100,000 units of this was sold to comic book shops, right?
Mm-hmm. I believe so, yes.
Yeah, well worth it. You should be able to find one out there. Go out there and get this book.
Without spoiling too much, if you want a comic book about conspiracy theories, this is going to probably be the end all be all of that.
Man, I think they touch on the five greatest ones in this one issue. Yeah, the ones that are most, we hear most about today.
The first page, like Albert was saying, the first page, I couldn't tell what was going on. I mean, I could kind of see somebody's face. Then it was all the shadow and stuff. And I'm like, what? I couldn't figure out exactly. I mean, I know that it was an interview. I couldn't see it clearly. It was a little confusing with the lettering. I'm just talking about the first page or two. And so I was like, oh, gosh, I hope this is not going to be like this all the way. But then after the first page, it goes to, I guess, the present, maybe. Mm-hmm. Although that one woman's dress kind of looked like the 50s. It has to move forward because there is a character that from the... No, I don't want to spoil that either. But anyway, it must be some time afterwards. Once we got past that first setup page, the art was entirely appropriate. It wasn't as obscure. Now that I think about it, this whole concept of the conspiracy theory making things real. And when I think about that first page, it started out so dark, you can't figure out what's going on. But as that page progresses, the figures and the faces in that page get more clear. So it's like the conspiracy theory is taking hold of the artist conveys that the conspiracy theory is becoming real. And so the faces become more clear. Am I making sense there?
The book becomes more defined with the level of belief the reader is supposed to have at that point.
That when I go back and realize what that first page was and what was happening, then it makes more sense.
It's a great number one. It's a great start with a lot of promise. This artist is a top-notch artist. He knows what he's doing. He is theming his art to the level of belief you're supposed to have in each part of the story, which is integral to what the story is doing. This is an extraordinary book. It really did deserve the success that it's having, and I highly recommend you support it.
Yeah, and the reason why I just kept going on and on about that first page is because I almost put it down because of the murkiness of that first page. But just stick with it. I mean, it's only like a page or two. And by the time you get to the end of it, you'll want to go back and read it again and figure out. And then you realize the levels on the book. Yeah.
You're going to be going back and forth in these issues a lot. I've got the feeling. Mm-hmm. So I gave it straight fives.
As did I.
Yeah, I'll give it straight fives on this one. Yeah.
Yeah. Am I wrong, or is Tynion IV in the perfect position to be the new writer, the next big writer?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like his other book, I haven't read his other book. What is it? Something's Wrong with the Kids or something like that.
It's pretty good. Yeah. Okay. I think he's really onto something with Department of Truth. But given Department of Truth and Batman, and we sang his praises on, he took that one issue of the death metal, he actually made it coherent.
Yeah.
He made it something that you wanted to read out of a bunch of stuff. And I'm telling you right now, when we get the next regular issue that Snyder's writing, it's going to go right back to the indecipherable crap that it's always been. But for one bright, shining, standalone, one-shot issue, Tinian brought cohesion to the entire storyline. I think Tinian's the next big thing, just like Bendis was at one time. Frank Miller, I don't know if I want to go Frank Miller levels, but he's the one to watch. He's the one to put your money on.
Did y'all read Black Monday Murders?
I read some of it.
The Hickman book.
Yeah. I think I read some of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This kind of reminded me of Hickman, but this is not really a slam on Hickman, because I really actually like that about Hickman. I think Hickman's more poetic.
Yeah.
But this guy is more accessible. Which is kind of a weird word to use with this book. Like, if Hickman were writing this book, it would be equally interesting, but it wouldn't be as accessible. But it kind of feels like it would be in Hickman's wheelhouse.
The talent that Tinian has that shines through is, again, like we were saying with X-Ray Robot and the ability of Mike Allred to pull off something in three panels that immediately told the reader what was going on, that I doubt a handful of writers and artists out there could actually pull off. Tinian has the ability to understand this matter well enough to explain it to somebody who's coming in cold and make it accessible to them.
Mm-hmm.
Tinian's just a talent. T4 is a talent to watch. I'm still pushing that T4 thing. Not going to let go of that. We haven't talked about Lovecraft Country in a while.
Oh, my gosh.
Are we all still following Lovecraft Country?
Yeah.
It's taken a little bit of a twist. I thought we were going to have a much more coherent situation, but what we've got is we've jumped from theme to theme every episode with about three story strands connecting them all together.
I guess it's sort of like Tales from the Crypt to some extent with the narrative to link them. The overreaching arc and the individual stories every episode, to me, just none of them really add up.
It's like American Horror Story in reverse. You know, each season of American Horror Story, you've got the same cast, but they play different characters from season to season.
Yeah.
And what you've got going on in Lovecraft Country so far is you've the same characters, but each episode is a different thematic element to it. The first episode is the werehounds in the forest, the terror by night or the terror in the woods sort of situation. That's also replete in the racist little community that they have to come through and the racist cops that they run into. Then the second episode is the secret society episode. This last episode, the latest episode, is the tentacle porn episode. And the episode in front of it was the Indiana Jones episode. It's not an anthology, but yet at the same time, it is an anthology so far as we're visiting different elements of various Lovecraft tales with the same characters and some of the same themes running.
I don't really see it as an anthology because, as Albert said, it's the narrative. It's just each week they've chosen to tell a different...
The Haunted House episode.
Right. Each week they're continuing the narrative and continuing with these characters, but they are using different types of horror stories to tell them.
That's why I said I didn't want to call it an anthology, but it really, I mean, it's coming close to it. If we lost two threads to it.
It would be like if Game of Thrones every week went with a different type of fantasy genre. So like,
yeah.
The first episode was what we got. The first episode would be, I hate to say generic, but it would be medieval European fantasy.
Yeah.
And then the second episode would be Hogwarts. And then the third episode would have been Chinese or Asian
thematic
fantasy.
Element.
So,
yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it's the same characters, but for some reason, the subgenres of fantasy are each being explored every episode, I'm kind of amazed with what they're doing with that. And still continuing the story.
How do we still feel about it? The first couple of episodes, we were all on board. But now...
Well, it just sort of stopped going anywhere real fast.
I don't know. Could you say that the last episode with him on tour in Korea and that situation, I think that was the most poignant episode we've gotten so far.
Well, that's not the last episode, but yeah.
Oh, well, then I've missed the last episode.
Oh, man, the last episode was like, if you thought all of this
crazy space stuff.
Yeah, it was.
Well, then I'll have to watch the last episode.
Time travel kind of thing, yeah.
Damn, I'm sorry I missed that.
Empowerment, yeah.
I'll go back and watch it, make sure I watch it. But I thought the Korea situation, I thought that went a long way, especially with his character. With the
I actually thought that was the worst episode so far.
Really?
Well, I didn't like the, yeah. I didn't care for the tentacle porn aspects, but I thought if you took that out and was just dealing with his character and the wartime situation, I thought there was something to that. But
I was stunned at that episode. I do think that had probably the most emotional core to it.
There we go. That's what I'm looking for. Yeah.
Not just with him, but with the Korean gal that he, quote unquote, left behind. Yeah. I mean, I like that episode. The newest episode, which I guess you haven't seen, that's the one that's taken the furthest jump off because it deals with Hippolyta. And you're kind of wondering, how is this going to connect back?
There's one aspect that bothers me. And of course, you know, I'm the Caucasianist Caucasian that ever That was not the place to go with that ever caught. I have yet to see one white person show that they're an actual human being in this. Even if it's just a white person saying, hey, have a nice day or walk on or something like that. But I mean, every white person in this is just some animal.
Not really even human. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's it. That adds to the overall story arc and the theming of Lovecraft, because you read Lovecraft, nothing's quite right. I wasn't really watching it and taking notes, but when it really began to hit home, when I really thought about that, it was the episode with the skin crawler episode.
Yeah.
Skinwalker. Yeah. I thought that was an interesting take on the skinwalkers too.
Yeah.
I'm in because like it's.
Oh, I'm still in. I'm thoroughly entertained by it. It's just, if you had asked me at the outset of this, what are you going to bet on? Are you going to bet on Lovecraft Country or are you going to bet on Raised by Wolves? I would have said, oh, Lovecraft Country all day long. But now, yeah, I'm saying Raised by Wolves. I'm far more engrossed in Raised by Wolves, and Lovecraft Country is more of an amusement. It's more of a, oh my God, what are they going to do this week sort of situation. And it's got, you know.
For Lovecraft Country or the
other one? For Lovecraft Country.
Well, Lovecraft, the way they do it, like to me, there's no investment to it. Like, we know you don't have to think about it. You don't have to really be like, well, I wonder what's going to happen next, because it's pretty obvious the way things are going with it. I just don't think there's much of an investment in Lovecraft Country as far as anything that you would think about after you're done watching the episode.
Yeah, you're not sitting there pondering a lot. But really? With Raised by Wolves, yeah, I go back over Raised by Wolves with, okay, well, we've learned this, this, and this. It's kind of engaging, more along the lines of Game of Thrones is. Lovecraft Country, I'm watching, and I was like, damn, Lovecraft Country has got the talent. We know who's behind it, and damn, it's entertaining, it's good, it's solid. But Get Out, the movie Get Out, we've all three seen that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yep. Same talent base. Well, not the exact same. But Jordan Peele is also a producer on this, I believe. Misha Green is the creator of it. But Jordan Peele was the writer-director on Get Out. Get Out, I mean, there are layers to that you can sit and unwrap over and over and over again. Layer up on layer of this one movie incorporated into it. To me, on this, everything's right there on the screen. You've seen it. So long as you remember the storyline, so long as you remember what kicked this off and different little developments here and there, you're fine. It's no deeper than the pictures you're being presented on television. Whereas there's something deeper, something more significant to, say, movies like Get Out and Us. Us is pretty messed up.
I think Lovecraft Country is pretty much like a water cooler show. I mean, there's lots. That's one of those.
To me, the whole thing's just surface level.
I won't go so far as to say surface level. I'm entertained by it. I'm engrossed by it. And it makes good statements and it makes good points. But we've seen this episode. And now let's move on to the next one. I don't feel the need to go back and revisit the haunted house episode. I don't feel the need to go back to revisit the initial episode. I did watch the initial episode twice because I was getting psyched up. I was thinking that, okay, this is going to be something that we're going to want to watch watch each episode twice, but it turns out I'm fine on just one viewing of it. I don't want to miss that one viewing, and I'm shocked that I missed the latest one. That's just me losing track of time.
I don't know. I mean, to me, there's always a lot to unpack, especially like since it deals so much with race and history and horror that follows fantastical horror and the reality of everyday life horror.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that Get Out or Lovecraft Country has more to say in a meta state concerning race relations?
Well, I mean, I don't remember a whole, I mean, it's been a while since I watched Get Out, but I Lovecraft Country. I think Get Out was, well, because it's really, you know, I mean, you know, it's that movie versus TV thing too. There's just so much more room to explore things in TV.
Okay. And there is I'm completely with you on that. And that's what I'm saying. I think Get Out is the more poignant of the two. I understand what they get through here, and each episode deals with it, but it's like different aspects of it. I understand we're seeing different aspects. I'm just saying that I don't feel it's delivering as much as I thought it initially was going to with the first two episodes.
Hmm.
Like I said, I'm still watching it. I'm going to watch this all the way through. I'm enjoying it. I look forward to it each week. But if it comes to which is the more powerful work, which hits more to the core, yeah, I'd have to say Get Out does, at least for me.
I don't know. I mean, because also, like, you know, we haven't finished the story here. I just think the Lovecraft Country just has much more room to explore. Plus, the other thing about Lovecraft Country is it's not just race. It's also various minorities. I mean,
oh, yeah. Like, no, it's like not this, just, yeah, the Korea episode.
Right. But I mean, there's a lot of gender issues, I guess, or gender.
Well, that's true, too. They do touch on everything. They touch on everything and they're right to, and it's entertaining and engaging. It's just not something I find myself wanting to go back to and watch over and over again. Not because I find it boring, but because I feel, OK, I've gleaned everything I could glean from this episode. What are they going to do to shock me next week? Oh, tentacle porn, that sort of thing. This is the theme of this episode, and here's the moral of the story, and then move along. It's like when they try to take a Twilight Zone episode, mm-hmm. and turn it into a full-blown movie. There's only a handful of Twilight Zones that justify full-blown movies. One of the more recent ones was, God, I think it was Cameron Diaz, and who played Skeletor?
Frank Langella.
Yeah, Frank Langella. And it had Cameron Diaz, Frank Langella, and Cyclops from the first X-Men movie. God forbid I look up their names. It involved the box. It was based on that Twilight Zone, the Rod Serling story about the box. You press this button, somebody you've never met and somebody you never know will drop dead, but you're going to get $1 million. They turned that into like a 2-hour movie, and it just did not hold up. Whereas it held up real well as I forget if it was a 30-minute or an hour episode of Twilight Zone. It all depends on where. Do you actually think we're going to get an ending at the season finale, or do you think we're just going to get something that gives us a continuation into season two?
I would imagine they're going to lead it into season two. If there's even anything to lead into, they haven't really done much.
There's going to be a lead into season two. There'll be some kind of cliffhanger thing.
Yeah.
I think now they only have, is it 3 episodes left? Maybe 2?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, by your count, I think you've got 3 episodes left.
So, they've got so many threads, I don't see how they're going to wrap it up in 2 or 3 episodes.
Okay.
It's obviously a MacGuffin quest. You know, they're trying to get to the book and they're trying to decipher the book. They both want it. All these other MacGuffins are supposed to be leading into the book. I can see them all coming together, but there's so many of them because, like, then you have the sheriff, and that's probably going to come back around maybe this Sunday because apparently.
I would like for that to come back around.
Well, yeah, because apparently after the events of the last episode, going to be some police.
I've gotten to go see. Okay, so I'm just going to have to go see that last episode, and we'll talk more about it.
Yeah.
Am I the only one watching The Boys season?
Yeah, I can't ever get freed up to watch it.
No, I'm not watching it.
I'm liking the second season better than I liked the first season, but I'm hesitant to recommend The Boys to anybody because this serves no moral standing or purpose whatsoever to watch this. This is just an ongoing superhero train wreck. And if you read or are familiar at all with the comic books, you know that. If you've seen the first season, you know that. But I'm going to give season two this. Season two is faster paced than the first season. Now that we know all the characters, all the players are on the table, it's moving on at a breakneck speed. And much the same way that I said I'm tuning into Lovecraft Country to see, oh, what are they going to do this week? That's the exact same way I'm tuning into The Boys. But they take some twists and turns in this that are just really, they keep you engaged. They really do. And I hate to even say, oh, I'm watching The Boys or I enjoy The Boys. It's definitely a guilty pleasure, but yeah, I am enjoying The Boys.
Yeah, because I remember you talking about that book and comic book, and I don't remember it being a positive review of the comic book. Let's put it that way.
It's not, but you couldn't put it down. Once you were engaged in it, damn Garth Ennis, the fact of the matter is that Ennis does enough character development that you're concerned about that you've got to find out what happened to these characters. Got to find out how this ends. You've got to find out where this goes. It's similar in this. Although they came real close to making you completely disinterested in Carl Urban's character of Butcher in the first couple of episodes, but they're kind of curving back around. I think they saw that they were skating a little too close to the edge there, and they needed to pull back and give his character, make his character a little more empathetic to the audience. Because in the first two or three episodes, I was getting kind of tired of Butcher, or I was really beginning to dislike Butcher more so. And he's not a likable character. He's not meant to be likable, but there are ways to do that. And if you break all ties with the viewer concerning that character, then that's not a good thing. This is a train wreck of a storyline and of a series, but I'm completely and totally engaged. And they do get some under the wire commentary in there that's pretty stout as well. You see, I don't want to recommend watching The Boys to anybody. I don't want to be responsible for that, but I'm watching and I'll continue watching it. Well, okay, we're going to wind it up here. Once again, we appreciate you for joining us. Thank you for all of your emails. Thank you for your Avenger questions. We now have enough Avenger questions that we are going to get together with the Avengers Assembled guys and record a very special Avengers-based episode for the listeners out there. So you'll hear more about that in the coming weeks. We did get an email because I kept praising Atlanta. Atlanta has more listeners to us than anybody else. Birmingham is second. Birmingham is second on that list. But yeah, Atlanta, we've just exploded in Atlanta. But thank you, Birmingham. Thank you for not kicking me out of the state yet. Y'all know I don't like Nick Saban, and I appreciate that y'all permit me to continue to live here. I understand how important that is to everybody in Alabama.
For some reason or another.
Sandra, Albert, and I are very appreciative of all of our listeners everywhere. Thank you so very much. Kingdom Casts, that's Kingdom, CASTS, @gmail.com, KingdomComics@gmail.com, Kingdom Casts and Kingdom Comics on Facebook and Twitter. You got any thoughts, questions, comments? We love hearing it all. Please do send it in to us. Let us know. We did not do the upcoming comics for next week because starting this Monday night after 10 p.m., sometime after 10 p.m., we will be posting an independent episode called Pull List. And the first pull list will be regarding the comic books that will be released October 7th, 2020, for the week of October 7th, 2020. And we go down the list in pretty good detail. We don't get every comic book coming out, but we get the majority of them and we get the important ones. And this is just to help you at the beginning of each week listen to the pull list episodes, because we're going to try this for a few weeks and see how it goes. Listen to the pull list episodes to appraise you of what's about to hit the stands that Tuesday and Wednesday. So please do. And keep in mind, our regular podcast will continue on Thursdays, to be posted on either Thursdays or Fridays. But yes, this Monday night, sometime after 10 p.m., we will be posting the first Kingdom Casts pull list episode. So stay tuned for that. Let us know what you think about it. And after you listen to us, and send us your thoughts and feelings on that as well. Sandra, you got anything to say to them?
No.
Albert, you got anything to say to them?
Nah.
I have something to say. Thank you for listening. And putting up with my rants about certain characters.
There you go. And Albert, do you want to thank them for putting up with your rants?
I mean, I don't force them to listen to this.
Just disregard that. Continue to listen. Force your friends to listen. shove your ear pods in their ears, just go out there and recruit. God. Thank you all so very much, and we'll talk to you soon. Tell them good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Talk to you next week. Remember, Monday after 10 p.m., Kingdom Casts pull lists goes up. Kingdom Casts is owned by Kingdom Comics Incorporated and produced by Stan Daniel and Albert Marsh. No part of this program may be reproduced, replicated, or replayed without permission. Special thanks to Sandra Swindle. Also, thanks to our content contributors, Jason Bean, Tim Bryant, Denise Daniel, Josh Duke, Alex Fitzpatrick, Charles Hickey, Allison Marceau, Mark Adam Miller, and Katrina Olstead. Logo designed by Geoffrey Gwynn. Edited by Stan Daniel. Kingdom Casts is copyrighted 2020, all rights reserved.
It's a comic book-ass comic book.